The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. The 21st century has introduced new norms and resources that are of immense value to businesses and their bottom line. Yet in business, we require relevance and innovation, not just more information. We need the true stories of what works and what does not work. Our program today will tell you what you need to know. The experiences, perspectives, and resources shared by Jen and her guests will make all the difference for you and your business moving forward. Now, here's your host, Jen Sabin.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Moving Forward. I'm Jen Sabin, and today we have an incredible topic. We're going to be engaging and discussing and exploring risky business, strategic risk, or roll of the dice. And our guest today is truly an inspiration in this area in terms of risk, risk-taking, swinging out there. Now, risk is essentially a course of action, a decision that involves uncertainty. It involves vulnerability. It involves the possibility of incurring a loss or a negative occurrence. And for those of us in business, starting a business, growing a business, wherever you are in the cycle of your business, we deal with risk on a daily basis. Most of us, including myself, don't discern it. We don't identify it as risk. But given what the definition of risk is, then yes, on a daily basis, almost everything involves a potential unknown or uncertainty. We have a probability or an expectation, yet until it's realized, we don't know. So it would fall into the umbrella of risk. Yet if we looked at everything that way or really engaged with it that way, we'd probably be stuck or stymied or never actually working in our business, just working on our business. Yet there are these other times when there are crossroads, there are decisions, there are places where the risk is observable, it's palpable, where we recognize whether it's going for that bank loan or signing that lease for office space or sending the RFP to the larger client or opening the restaurant or the retail store or dealing with your first manufacturer or delivering to a new target market or launching a new product or service. There really is that piece where there is a more recognized opportunity or potential possibility for loss. The risk is recognized. And so for us in this room listening, this kind of virtual community, what is your tolerance for risk? What is your relationship to risk? And there's when we are in the arena of those larger observable risks, those decisions, those crossroads, those where we recognize that literally that there's a potential for loss or it might not be realized. What has us move forward? Because the bottom line is if we're not growing, we're either stagnating or atrophying. So for a healthy, scalable, sustainable, profitable business, we need to be growing. And that involves taking risks. And one part of the component of risk-taking is really around belief. It's the part where our commitment, our passion, our conviction give courage. We don't necessarily know how or why, but we believe. It's a knowing. And we perceive the outcome to be greater than the exposure. We're trusting something. We're trusting ourselves, and we're willing to put work and effort and whatever it takes behind it. It's not a roll of the dice. And yet it is without including some discernment and some strategy, a strategic perspective. So for example, if we think strategically or incorporate some strategy, what that simply means is we have a plan to bring about a desired future. It's a method. It's something that's been designed. So it's not by happenstance. It's part of something that is a choice or a decision. It doesn't mean that the risk is not there, but what we've essentially done is recognize the potential outcome against the potential exposure, and we choose to move forward. Now, some of this is done in executive planning sessions, cognitively. Some of this is done just, you know, in the shower or on a sleepless night. Depends on you, your style, your risk tolerance, the structure of your business. But here's the thing for all of us. We're not going to move from where we are to where we want to be in terms of our business or in terms of creating something that doesn't exist without being willing to engage in risk. So is it a roll of the dice, or is it something that's a belief and strategic? Today, our guest, as I said before, is an incredible role model and inspiration in this arena. We have Dr. Arlene Schrutt, and Dr. Arlene Schrutt is a collaborative pianist and a visionary. She is the founder and artistic director of the New Triad for Collaborative Arts. And the New Triad for Collaborative Arts is really the only one of its kind that goes beyond musical instruction, and it trains artists to visually engage and personally communicate with their audiences. So it makes classical music more accessible and engaging to audiences. It's a nonprofit, a 501(c). Yet, in addition, Dr. Schrutt is on the faculty of the Juilliard School of Music and the Manhattan School of Music. She has performed across North America and Europe. She's recorded for Dorian, Albany, Summit, Center, and Orion. She's been hailed by the New York Times as a strong and sensitive pianist. She launched the National Association of Accompanists and Coaches. She's taught at universities and colleges. She serves regularly as the official pianist for international opera competitions and galas sponsored by organizations such as the Lauren Zachary Society, the Gerda Listener Foundation, and there's a list, you know. She served on the Aspen Music Festival faculty for 14 years, taught at the Vancouver International Song Institute, Opera Fest in the Vineyard, Renaissance Festival, Song Fest, and in addition, is currently serving as the head coach and pianist at the Atlantic Music Festival. In 2003, Dr. Schrutt was honored as inaugural Coach of the Year by Classical Singer magazine. I can go on, and she's here, so it would be kind of remiss to talk about you when we can talk with you, right? So I'm going to make that segue right now in a not so subtle way, and we are so fortunate. Welcome, Dr. Schrutt, to Moving Forward.
Thank you so much, Ms. Saban. What a joy to be here.
Okay, so moving with the Moving Forward concept, let's start with the New Triad for Collaborative Arts, so often called New Triad. What had you in this incredibly impressive career where you are in demand, you are recognized, you know, it's extremely robust, create this new chapter? What had you establish New Triad?
Well, what happened was an amazing experience that I had in the 1990s, the early 1990s, during those magical summers when I was on the Aspen Music Festival faculty. And I was coaching operas, I was teaching opera class, and I was really paying a lot of attention to my students. It felt like they were changing a lot, and I was wanting to understand what was this about, and what was new, and what was important to them. And when I would start asking them in the traditional way as I would with my, you know, very traditional music education, I had wonderful education at Eastman School of Music and got my doctorate at USC, but we were always taught, you know, it's all about the composer and how can you bring across the composer's desires and what's on the page and take your personality out of it. And what I started to notice with my students was, number one, they wanted to be interfacing in a much more active way with people around them. I mean, we weren't doing Facebook and Twitter at that time, but there was a real kind of sharing of information that was starting to happen, I noticed, around music videos. And when I would ask my kids, like, are you listening to this, and what recording do you like, and what artists are you listening to, they would not talk about what they were hearing, but they were talking about what they would see on the video. And mostly this wasn't classical. This was like pop music or jazz, whatever they were listening to, where there were MTV videos. And I said, wow, classical music, better wake up, because staying in this oral world where it used to be you had a very successful career if you had an exclusive engagement, let's say, with the Columbia Records or EMI or Deutsche Grammophon, that was like the height of your musical career. Now you're going to have to be able to look interesting and have this whole interdisciplinary appeal to be able to, number one, keep the audiences who now had moved to technology and who are interested in getting this type of a more interesting performance in their, you know, entertainment sphere, and forget about the young artists. But this is the only way they do things. I even heard from one of my colleagues this past year who was, his name's Ken Benson. He's now new on my new Triad faculty and was 25 years a manager at Columbia Artists Management. He was doing a consultation with one of the singers who was in an advanced program at Juilliard. And she says she cannot listen to just a record and have a sense of the piece she's going to perform. She can only perceive it if she can watch a video. So I said, wow, we better learn how to do this. And the shock for me was, of course, coming from my background where I was very confident in my piano playing and in my coaching and my music making, but I had no idea how to get people to be dramatically involved and tell this interesting story with their whole body and to interface in an active way during the recital setting. And I got together, and I had a really wonderful brainstorming year in 2003 and realized, you know, we need to teach have a curriculum come together that teaches all these different aspects. And we did that for our first pilot in 2003 and particularly invited people to our performance who say they hate classical music. And it was so wonderful to get feedback and meet with people after the recital. And one person who had just broken up with her boyfriend threw her arms around me and she says, I think I'm going to be able to make it to the other end. I'm going to be able to love somebody again. I really got this. And somebody else said, wow, I just never knew that this music had anything to do with my life. I thought it was like a museum thing and I'm going to look like, when are you doing your next performances? And I said, wow, we're really on to something. And then things evolved from then. We've increased our curriculum. We've entered different spheres. We're just about ready to launch hopefully a 12 college and a big national convention first outing of an opera masterclass series that will go national in 2013.
This is so exciting. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to hear more about what happens next. So there was this year of formation and kind of crystallization and recognition of this is wanted and needed. Then we'll find out what happens next after this break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
If you're anything like me, you're tired of all the partisan bickering and you just want our leaders to get on with the business of solving our problems. Hi, I'm Rebecca Costa, host of The Costa Report, every Tuesday at 6 a.m. and again at 6 p.m. on the Voice America Business Channel. Join me each week as I welcome top newsmakers from the left, right, and center for an honest look at our greatest challenges, from government debt and terrorism to energy, education, and election reform. No topic is off limits. That's The Costa Report every Tuesday at 6 a.m. and again at 6 p.m. right here on the Voice America Business Channel.
Tune in for What About Wealth every week to learn the vital answers to your questions about creating wealth, investing it, donating it, and protecting it. Your hosts, are Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee, who explain the principles that govern wealth in terms you can understand. Building and preserving positive wealth requires correct action, but few people know how wealth really works. Listen every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel and find the answers you need about wealth.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello and welcome back. We are so fortunate to have Dr. Arlene Schrutt, founder and artistic director of the New Triad for Collaborative Arts with us. And she was telling us what had her create a New Triad, and she recognized the need to really transform and innovate the audience, you know, the experience around in the presentation of classical music. So, Arlene, you recognized this need, and you did some beta tests in business, we'd call, or focus groups, and then what happened? Because here it is just as a recognition.
Right. Well, we did that one wonderful one-month training program in 2003, and then really looked at what worked, what didn't work, and mainly what didn't work was we needed to go into a more robust curriculum, and then we decided that we were going to pilot it fall of 2003, which was very, very successful. We held official auditions, and we did a really nice launch of a big performance that was reviewed in Opera News Online. You can see that at our website, newtriad.org, and you can also see a lot of multimedia imaging from a lot of the seminars that we've done around the country. We really have pretty much a school without walls. We are hosted by either conventions or other organizations or universities around the country to do specific projects for part of whatever their population is, whatever they're interested in, and where they feel like the audiences need to be built, and that we need to create a new type of performer for the 21st century to deliver the type of performances that will grow an audience for classical music, because it unfortunately has been declining over many, many years. One of my first realizations of that was also in the 1990s when I made my first CD recording in 1989, was for a wonderful and small record company, which since has, I think, completely gone out of business, Dorian, and they were able to pay the artists and put us up, and it was it was just a marvelous and very expanded situation for making a recording. And every other recording I've made since then, I think I have about 10 recordings, they've all been generated by, let's say, a college giving a special grant to one of their faculty members to make this recording. So for anybody but the really highest elite artists that you would recognize their name, the Pavarottis or the Renee Flemings of today, that really there is no classical music industry that's paying artists to go out and perform. So I started also noticing what's happening with my colleagues, what's happening with my students, where there are fewer and fewer jobs for them. Even city opera, as we knew it, is, you know, pretty much gone at this point. So I think we're having to look for like a new model for entrepreneurship in this field. And New Triad is one of those examples of looking at what does the artist need to do differently in order to, gain this new platform for what it is that we do. Otherwise, I really have an ethical problem of the thousands and thousands of people who are being graduated from music school every year, and where are they going to go and what are they going to do? So part of what I want to do is for the art form itself, and part of what I want to do is for these generations to be able to have work, and for future generations to not lose classical music. You might say, oh, well, why should we save this endangered species? To me, when I look at classical music versus the many, many different pop forms, and there's a woman, Jeanette Lovetri, who teaches commercial music at Shenandoah University in the summer. And it's very interesting watching her teach. She teaches wonderfully in these different styles. But she says, I teach every style but classical. So when you can see that classical has something special, just in terms of, let's say, human resonance, it does not need a microphone to fill a large hall. But the beauty itself has complexity. It has symbols and metaphors for our lives, how we're in relationship to ourselves, how we are in communication with that inner being, with our heart, with our soul, as well as our mentality, how we're in relationship with our family and with our friends and with nature and with maybe something beyond us, since we didn't create ourselves, we didn't birth ourselves in this world. What is that magical thing that goes up beyond that humanity? And for me, this is the reason why we need to keep classical music, no matter what percentage it might be of culture in our world, to keep that beauty and that sense of timelessness, not just something which is of our time and will be a fad and will move on. It's different than an art museum. When you think an art museum, oh yes, they can keep the Picassos, they can keep the Rembrandts, even if maybe there are contemporary artists who fill more of the museum. But with classical music, we've got to find a way that it can stay alive with the way people are taking in their entertainment.
So it really is, as you said, transforming it and the whole purpose of New Triad. What had you create this as a non-for-profit? So here you are, you have this idea, instead of maybe taking it to a school and launching a new program or initiative, you actually created an entity to bring this to the world.
I actually, it's interesting. If I had been part of a regular university system, I might have launched it within the university, because I feel like there are a lot of strengths of being able to work through a development department of a university. But the conservatories in New York, Juilliard, and Manhattan School of Music function very differently. There is no tenure system, and there's really no platform within the school to do a project like this. So I thought, well, I'm going to do a not-for-profit. And one of the amazing things that happened was there was a Brevard entrepreneurship seminar several years ago, and I was one of the keynote speakers. And afterwards, the person who was head of the conference said, you know, Arlene, you should really change. I think what you're going to do is going to really blast out into the world, and I think you should be a for-profit. And I went back and I talked to my board about it, and they all had these huge smiles on their face, and they said, well, you could do that, but you're saving yourself, you know, well over $100,000 a year just on legal fees. And that's doing small type projects, let alone if you launch a big project that, let's say, is involving cell phone apps or a TV competition or some global initiative. Just for the legal itself, you should stay a not-for-profit. And one of the wonderful things is that you can have things that are successful, projects which are very successful financially, and even move to self-sustainability within a not-for-profit.
Absolutely. It's a structure. It's a tax structure. Yeah. It doesn't mean that money, one of the common conversations of not-for-profits, and I do a lot of work with them. First, we get over that money conversation, right?
Yeah.
However, so here's this piece, and I'm kind of circling back to, because you have this passion. I mean, you're talking about it as an endangered species, and what kind of comes to mind are people who are looking to save the rainforest or something. There really is a passion and a commitment here. And there's this robust career. Yet now, as much as it's set up as a 501(c), you're in the business of it now.
Right.
So
that really has to do with creating the type of projects that universities, particularly, who tend to say, I really am proud of what I'm doing at this university, that's all I need. And it's really challenging to introduce the possibility that there might be something beyond that. And that's why I feel like, I had a mentor who said to me, you know, you're about 5 to 10 years ahead of the curve. You're going to have to be patient about getting schools to recognize that this is what they need. But I really feel, for example, from having done a little bit of just experimental marketing and then honing in on the level of university that really needs the type of opera program which we're launching in 2013, that now we're going to start to, you know, have those 12 universities and also a national convention that we're presenting at. And I wouldn't be surprised if from that we get 5 or more years of engagements to do this, you know, just from doing the one. So it's a matter of having a program which is robust enough. We had done a lot of what my strategic person calls onesies for a long time, and we realized that the one thing that's common about all of our projects, whether we've done a 2-day project, 4-day project, 1-month project, is it's a series of master classes that teach specific skills that then lead to a performance. So now we're calling it Masterclass Series, and really with all of our programs, we're moving it through that packaging.
So I'm hearing that you're starting to talk about it in terms of packaging. It's a product versus, you know, a commodity, and something now that could be scalable and distributable in a different kind of way that leads to a whole nother level, you know, in terms of versus what you called, you know, one-offs or sniper shots, whatever you want to
it's just a whole different thing of coverage. And, you know, before we were on this program, I was thinking about what are some favorite books that I've read that have inspired me over the last year about moving ahead and what I need to do. And one of them was Isaacson's book on Steve Jobs, when he talked about how initially Steve was going out personally and to stores or to different outlets and saying, hey, will you buy my computer? And finally, when he connected with his first marketing guru, said, hey, you know, we've got to put these in the stores and we have to have a marketing plan and all this. And that's when life really started changing for him and for the world.
Well, it takes it from kind of a monologue to a dialogue. And when we talk about strategy, what I mentioned earlier was, you know, that plan for fulfilling on a realized outcome, you know, and all of this is a risk. You know, when we talk about this, there's no guarantee, there's no certainty. You are transforming something that nobody has really addressed that needs to be transforming. From what I'm hearing, there's kind of this passive observer like, oh, look at what's happening. And now you're getting in there, in your elbows,
I have to say, interestingly enough, when I started the not-for-profit, one of the questions that was asked to me in the, you know, not-for-profit dummies book and other people who would say to me, you know, directly, look at all of the other analogous organizations and try to pattern yourself so you have some sort of a template. And that's where I kept on really coming up against a wall, because there are a lot of fantastic organizations that actually present young artists with more opportunities to perform, but honestly don't change the essence of what the performer is doing. So some of those groups have already died. Some of them are scaling back. Some of them are hanging on. But, you know, that isn't, you know, really my concern or my worry. But what I realized was that we were the only people who were really looking at the problem and saying, hey, instead of pointing and saying, hey, why aren't you hiring us and why aren't there more jobs, saying maybe there's something wrong with what we're doing and let's see if we can fix that.
Well, what's interesting is you pointed out that you're focusing on the consumer, no longer on the delivery of the composer music. There's been certain standards and criteria which are almost iconic, like you don't mess with, and you're actually deconstructing and rebuilding. You know, a great example.
Actually, I'm saying that the music itself, we're not deconstructing, but what we're doing is we are deconstructing or creating a new frame.
That's what I meant by deconstructing kind of what the music is, the music. But when you're talking about the delivery method, you know, it's interesting. There was a company, and when you looked for examples, I find it fascinating that you look to your own industry, because one of the things that I'm always encouraging my clients to do is we look across industry sectors, which is so valuable because it's context. So think of, there was a company that had a new way to take a picture and was turned down again and again and again. The company was called Halloy. Today we know it as Xerox. There was a gentleman who wanted to improve running shoes in the 70s, and he took a waffle iron and put it on the back of a sneaker outside of his car trunk. And today we know that company is Nike. So there's, you know, there are these originations, and you mentioned Steve Jobs and kind of his, you know, going out there in the trenches one by one and then learning how to have a different type of approach. But all of these, you know, certainly involve risk. We're going to go to break in a moment. When we come back, I'd be interested to hear kind of the journey of setting up the organization, the board, dealing with the money, like the whole construct of it, not necessarily your purpose, commitment, and what you're delivering, but the business of it, so to speak.
I look forward to that.
Okay, when we come back, we'll be speaking more with Dr. Arlene Schrett. We're going to go to break now.
Thank you.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. Do you, like most Americans, spend the majority of your life at work? Are you making it the joy that it deserves to be, or are you feeling drained and unfocused?
Tune in to A Great Place to Work with hosts Kurt Kaufman and Dr. Kathy Sorensen. Your hosts have more than 30 years of experience in workplace consulting and are ready to bring you the secrets and success stories of businesses who are making their business a great place to work. Listen every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel and enjoy a better workplace and a better life. Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. What does a visual workplace mean to you? How does it contribute to operational excellence? And what steps do you take to put it powerfully in place? Listen to The Visual Workplace, Work That Makes Sense, to find out. Each week, Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, visual workplace expert and award-winning author, shares tools and strategies to help you make the workplace speak at a glance without saying a word. Learn to work safer, faster, better, and at far less cost, no matter what business you're in. Tune in to The Visual Workplace every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business. You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello, welcome back. We're with Dr. Arlene Schrutt, and who is the founder and artistic director of the New Triad of for Collaborative Arts, and it essentially is innovating and transforming the delivery of classical music, not the music itself, but how do we have audiences be engaged and regenerate that passion for classical music to ensure that this kind of endangered species doesn't last very long on that list and becomes, you know, grows and part of the mainstream, so to speak. So here, Dr. Schrutt, Arlene, created this 501(c). And Arlene, what, with everything else you had going on, what did it take to build this, to create this? I mean, how did you make that work?
I would say initially, just the legalities of doing it are actually quite, you know, simple. You can go and incorporate, and once you do the paperwork, you get your employee number, and then you're set up with the state, and you have to decide how many states you're going to be robustly soliciting for money, and then find out what the legalities are of soliciting in those states and getting, you know, permissions there. There's a lot of that kind of work, but that's fairly easy. You also are able to start with a very small board, a board of three. So I started the group initially with my husband and with one of my friends who was also very passionate about what we were doing, and really, you know, launched in and had a collaborator who felt like she could really bring a very successful board to New Triad. And it ended up being just one of these very, let's say, over-promise, under-deliver situations. I was in my first year of having the not-for-profit, and the fundraising was not going very well. I'd actually called to have a professional come in to negotiate about the situation, and my colleague basically dropped out and pulled the board. So that was a really interesting phase of my life. I took it very, very hard. And then it took a couple months to kind of get back on my feet, start consulting with some people about how to really, you know, put everything, you know, right and be able to move ahead. And it was actually, that was the point of the greatest financial risk, because in the initial kind of offering of putting together a board, it was on the contingency that I could figure out a way to create a business plan, to get all of our branding together, to launch a website, all of this, which I did. And that was my savings, my credit cards. Even at that point, you do, when you're starting a not-for-profit, you aren't initially able to get a bank account, so I was stealing out of my own bank account. I mean, all the things I say that you shouldn't do, but you're stuck between a rock and a hard place until you're really able to get those things together. And then eventually got everything separated, and we had, you know, we righted the board, we brought some people on the board. But to me, that is one of the biggest challenges, I think, for any not-for-profit, and it is an ongoing challenge for every group that I know, is to find that professional board, not just people who are very interested in your mission and who are well-meaning, but people who have skills in very different business areas that you might need. I mean, for example, upcoming on my board, I really need people who know how to plan events. I need people who have good contacts with corporations and foundations, personal contacts. Other people maybe who have government connections. These are areas which I'm not yet covered with my board, areas which I recently brought new people on my board who are phenomenal. I have a great treasurer, George Dumani, who we went to college together, and we were musicians together, and he's an equity fund manager, and he's just brilliant at creating our budgets and financial planning. I'm thrilled. We also have a new Vice President Ruth Weniger, who has her own strategic development department company, and she's also helped with just figuring out how we need to package differently and we need to get to market differently and how to move it ahead. And one of the exciting things for this year is that if we're successful, we're going to basically triple our budget to date. And that will enable us to then get actually funding from different sources than we were able to before. So everything builds upon itself. It's an absolutely wonderful thing. And in terms of this board question, I really thought at a certain point that I had, quote-unquote, run out of people who I could talk to about joining my board. And what happened was that during this certain phase, I reconnected, not necessarily for new triad, but just because remembering these people who I just respected so much and was curious about what was happening with their life. And it was basically through Facebook that I reconnected with all of them. And now that they're on my board, right now we have a 5-person board, and 4 of us went to the same college together, and one of them went to another, like where this colleague of mine from grad school, the lawyer on our board, went to undergraduate school with her. So, like, never say never. Just keep on growing in terms of your network. You never know if that person who you're talking to will have any resources or abilities of answering your questions, but they may know somebody else who does. And just staying open to that and saving enough time in your schedule to realize what is that next important meeting instead of just doing busy work or spinning wheels.
Such a great distinction. And so, you know, just reframing a little bit, you started this, you built a board, you trusted someone, they didn't deliver, mm-hmm. you had to bring in a professional, the board mm-hmm. collapsed. So here you are 18 months into your commitment, your vision, your, you know, you've been doing what you said you would do. So there's that component of integrity, and you're looking around and everything's crumbling.
And I had put myself in great risk and great danger financially.
Yeah. So this is, you know, when we talk about in moving forward, that we're in the middle of our story, where this is about, where it's not tied up in a neat little package. Certainly, New Triad has had incredible accomplishments, and yet it still has this expansive future that is yet to be realized. However, when you look back, you know, it's bumpy. It's not easy. There was every potential to say at this point, I don't know, or put it on hold. And you regrouped and you sallied forth. And now it's beyond what you even thought was possible as a board then.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there were many months. We've always been a board that meets monthly because there's been so, since we don't have no staff, we hire consultants for specific things, that there have been so many important issues that need discussion, that need vote, that we meet during the year, basically 9 months every month. I just lost my train of thought. I'm so sorry. I'll come back to that.
Well, there's so much here. It's such a rich topic. And for those of you who are listening and kind of saying, well, isn't this about risk? I hope you can hear that this is all a risk. But when you're in it, you don't necessarily discern the day-to-day risk. The risk of putting together the grant, the risk of doing some outreach and talking to people and the possibility that they'll be part of it, or that will be the next, you know, linchpin or springboard. That where we recognize the risk is, oh my gosh, look at my finances.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
And that was the thing that I was talking about, the monthly board meeting, that there were months when literally we had no idea how we were going to get it paid. How we were going to pay whatever needed to happen. I mean, there were a lot of times where it was really challenging, and it is nice to be able to sleep at nights now to know that we have some money in the bank and that we have a great grant writer who's writing for us and a lot of interest from a lot of groups, to partner with us. I just feel very confident that these things are all building. And one of the things that happened, because, you know, everything was legal with the board from the beginning, was that they had said that they accepted that this was a, you know, everything that was spent was to build New Triad. So they really took that on as a legacy debt. And one of the most wonderful things is that this year we will pay off all of that debt.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's really nice to
start the new year and to start this new chapter of our life being debt-free.
Oh, my gosh. Bravo. Bravo.
Thank you.
You know, some of you know in terms of risk, I was the youngest woman to buy a seat on the American Stock Exchange or out of university and took a subordinated loan. And I remember the day I paid off that final piece of that loan, and what an incredible experience of accomplishment it is, and just so grounded, so joyous, so really, really well done, and absolutely a milestone.
Thank
We're
you.
Going to be going to a break in a moment, and when we come back, let's hear a bit more about, you know, what moving forward for New Triad, what do you perceive as the kind of where the outcome is greater than the exposure? What are some of the risks that you identify? And we'll explore a bit about that in terms of, you know, risky business. Because let's face it, for everyone listening, any one of us who is bringing something new into the world that hasn't existed before, even if there's versions of it, it's risky business.
Okay.
And we kind of don't know until the story's over. So we're going to go to break now and be back in a moment.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Leadership is a vital skill set in today's competitive global economy. Being a leader is not enough. To succeed, you must optimize your performance and know how to imbue others in your organization with leadership skills. Practical, actionable leadership insights are the focus of Leadership Development News, hosted each Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, by Kathy Greenberg and Relly Nadler on the Voice America Business Channel. Doctors Greenberg and Nadler, who coach global leaders on how to be most effective, will share their insights and contacts. The path to leadership excellence begins here.
Is your business model robust enough? In today's ever-changing business environment, people are working to transform themselves, their futures, and their business. Tune in to Business Reinvention with your host, Nancy Lynn. To stay ahead of the game in business, you have to constantly reinvent yourself and your organization. With Nancy's experience and that of her guest experts, you'll learn from stories of inspiration, innovation, and forward thinking. Listen for Business Reinvention live every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network.
You
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello and welcome back. We're with Dr. Arlene Schrutt, who is the founder and artistic director of New Triad for Collaborative Arts, which is essentially transforming and innovating the classical music experience for audiences by working with the artists themselves, and really an innovative and transformational educational approach to ensuring that classical music lives and thrives for those of us on the planet. And what we're exploring now is kind of from this point forward, we've talked a little bit about what it took to get to this point. Moving forward, what do you see as the kind of the next level of risk, which for my world means in some ways the next level of growth for New Triad?
Well, since it's really been less than a year that we recognized that we would need to package differently and started packaging as we're doing with our Opera Masterclass series. And we have two other projects which we're now preparing to launch, we hope, for 2013. So having all of these more robust and complicated projects that we're generating on our own and finding host institutions to present, that's really the next level because it's so much more activity for New Triad instead of a handful of projects a year, between 30 and 40 projects happening out there for a year. And, you know, really we can manage that without increasing our faculty. So that's very exciting. But the other aspect is that I've been thinking for a long time about some bigger projects, some really important projects that are would really demand our connecting and partnering with other large organizations, be they national or international. And one of the things which has been very much on my mind is finding a way for the really young people. I mean, I love working with the high school age, particularly. New Triad is doing its second year residency at LaGuardia High School in a college preparation residency all this coming fall. But so I realize that that's a very, very special group of how their minds are soaking things in and deciding, you know, how they're going to be citizens in the world. And I thought, wouldn't there be a wonderful way if we could have the kids start to connect what their artistry is with being able to help people who are in dire need around the world with one or another cause. And one of my special interests is the need for clean water around the world. And I discovered that there's a wonderful organization called water.org. We have a new person in New Triad who's head of strategic partnerships named Adam Sensenbrenner. He's one of my former favorite students from Appalachian State, now living in New York, and he's now made the connection with water.org. They're very interested in the project. They want to support with a lot of different wonderful resources, and that this will be a fundraiser for water.org. We're in the process now of trying to solidify our educational partner. And once that's done, we're going to have a fantastic project, I think, in the spring of 2014 doing that. But I think in terms of the risk for a project like that, it's really finding the alignment with these different partners that can really deliver all the aspects, all the details of a project that are necessary, and to trust that that will happen. It's like having something grow that's much bigger than you're able to achieve yourself by aligning with other partners.
So, you know, how do we move to that collaborative dynamic where I'm still responsible as the founder and artistic director of New Triad for the integrity, for the public experience, for like all those components? You're responsible, and other people are going to be accountable for different aspects of it.
Yes, absolutely. And partly just coming from, I know there are different people who start their own not-for-profits who may more come from the business end than from what the mission end is, or that they bring it on an executive director. So far, New Triad doesn't have that. So for me to inhabit those shoes is a really big growth. It's a big growth of me, and it's a big growth of the group.
And for everyone, again, and thank you so much for presencing this, that with growth, we are taking on risk, and some of it is the roll of the dice. Some of it has been addressed strategically, as it sounds like you've kind of brought both of those components in there because we don't know till it happens, but yet the outcome is greater than the potential exposure.
Yes.
That doesn't mean that there's not a risk, that there is an uncertainty or vulnerability. So for us to learn how to manage our relationship with this is so critical to the healthy and exponential growth of any business. I'm curious, what is it that you absolutely love about what you're doing, your industry, and what you're doing?
This includes New Triad, but goes beyond New Triad, and that is that there are so many different ways that you can be in the business and create new business and reinvent yourself. It's just endless. One thing that I didn't talk about, because it's not exactly related to New Triad, although everywhere I go, I'm always functioning pretty much as myself and as the founder of New Triad, and that is that after 911 and since 2008, that there have just been a lot of challenges in terms of being a freelancer, which I am, as well as my college jobs, in New York City. And I realized there are a lot of places out in America that need and want the type of work that I can give, and I've created satellites that are growing all the time. So, for instance, I'm leaving on September 5th, and I think I will be at about, 10 or 11 universities just doing aspects of what I do.
Oh, incredible, especially given, you know, when we go back to 2003 or 2004 and 2005, when you've just discovered that your board's been dissolved, that the people that you counted on didn't follow through, and in that place when looking at the financial challenges. And now to be, you know, queued up to go to 11 universities to make the difference that you want to see made in the world, and also that New Triad, it's beyond you. It's not just
right.
You. You have an incredible staff. I'm curious, what is one thing or what is something that you really don't like about your industry and what you do?
I have a couple different things. I mean, number one, it is discouraging to be in a downsizing field. All I hear is doom and gloom wherever I go. I'm sitting at lunch with judges and presenters and managers at different competitions, and it's really it's a pretty negative forecast for classical music. So being around that and being on the sort of front end of a movement, a philosophy and a movement where I'm not on a lot of their radar, like what I'm doing with New Triad yet, sort of waiting for the breakout project, and feeling like, wow, it's just hard to hear a lot of that negative talk. I think also it's challenging to see how many universities, because I deal a lot with universities, really would rather just put their head in the sand than realize that there's a problem.
And then it's kind of looking at what is their role in this in terms of longevity versus education.
Absolutely.
You know, so,
but also, you find that they're, like, increasing their tuition and maybe giving less even in terms of traditional values, let alone these more entrepreneurial values for the young musician. And to me, it's just ethically wrong. There's going to be no place for those musicians to go. Now, we can also say, well, they are learning certain disciplines and organization and other things that will benefit them when they go into another career. But one of one of the books that I've been reading, which I find very, very inspiring, is Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, where he talks about being born in a certain atmosphere. If you have certain talents, then you need about 10,000 hours to master anything. And that's about 10 years, 9 or 10 years of time. So if somebody spends 4 years in a music school and what they've trained for is not out there, it's sort of like, well, you train to be a typist and there are no typewriters anymore, then, you know, what are you going to do? And I think to have not wasted that 4 years is better. What I'm hopefully doing is creating something so that there will be work for classical musicians.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you are pioneering something that's new, and that always takes something. Let's just go to something that is more in a more positive dynamic. If you could give a gift to somebody embarking upon this career, a young adult or someone at any stage in your industry, what would you give them? What would it be?
I'd say definitely you have to take time to look within. You have to find out what your strengths are, what your passions are, and however that interfaces with whatever formal education you can get, that you should do that so that you're really well you know, well-armed, well-prepared, and then beyond that, to be entrepreneurial, to network like crazy with people from your past life, for people who you feel like you can meet and learn anything from.
Wow. Okay. So that's quite a big gift. Dr. Schrutt, thank you so much for spending time with us. And for those of you who are listening, we so appreciate your listening. Please send questions, share feedback. And if you want to contact Dr. Schrutt or Lean about something you heard today, or stay tuned to what's going on with New Triad, it's www.newtriad.org. Is that correct?
Indeed.
Okay, I just want to make sure. www.newtriad.org. And today, whether we were discussing it directly or not, I hope that you were recognizing where it's all a risk, and there's different levels, and there's different tolerances. Anything we do in business, you know, there's the potential for uncertainty. There's a vulnerability. So notice what you put in the category of risk, and if you are not taking risk in your business, what will be the next risk? Just strategic, that also comes with a belief. So it's not just a roll of the dice. It's not sporadic. It's not just for the sake of it, that it's intentional. And we look forward to getting together next week. This was Jen Sabin. I'm Moving Forward.
Thank you again for tuning in to Moving Forward. Please join Jen Sabin again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Make your week a Moving Forward week.